Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about AnySync, a really great way to put your stuff in the cloud and keep it secure. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett. Episode 524, recorded April 3rd, 2019. AnySync. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Deploy your apps on the simplest cloud platform with no surprises. Join a community of over 3.5 million developers on DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you may want to download right after the show and play with. I think today is going to be one of those. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Jonathan Bennett. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, Randall. It seems like it's been just forever since I've been on Floss Weekly. It's good to be here again.
What's it been, like 3 weeks or 2 weeks?
Something like that. But when you get used to doing it every week, two or three weeks is a long time off.
I know. Yeah, well, it's all worked out in terms of getting people in for scheduling. I think last week we had Simon in studio, so that worked out. So that was kind of fun.
Always a treat.
I have a different background. For those of you watching the video, I am currently in a hotel that is adjacent to the Pennsylvania CC. What's the CC? Something... Convention Center. There we go. Convention Center. I'm attending Cloud Foundry at the invitation of the CNCF, and I am looking for future guests for Floss Weekly. Although the good news is we've actually got it booked out all the way through like 2 months out or maybe 3 months out. So I don't know where it'd fit them if I found a guest today. I don't know. They'd have to be 3 months out. So that's kind of cool. And I'm on the hotel Wi-Fi, crossing fingers, hoping it all works out. So, it's been pretty good to me last night for streaming and things like that. So hopefully everybody's over at the conference today and we won't get bugged by them. Jonathan, are you in your usual spot?
Yes, here at the corporate headquarters, the newly constructed corporate headquarters here in Lawton, Oklahoma.
Lawton, Oklahoma. I think I've flown over you to come from Portland to here. So I actually literally flew over you probably Sunday night in the middle of the night, sometime in there. You probably woke up.
I was hopefully asleep.
I was hopefully like that. So today's project, interesting project. We have, and I forgot to ask him to pronounce his name, Tom Hockensen. He'll straighten me out afterwards. It's something like that. Hakoin, maybe? I don't know. He's going to be talking to us about AnySync, which is his project. It's a secure, end-to-end, encrypted, and privacy-respecting sync for your contacts, calendars, and tasks. So encryption is all the rage these days. It's very important you have privacy, especially for the data that you're storing in the cloud. And we're seeing more and more breaches and more court orders and things like that. So AnySync is end-to-end. What that means is that they can't even access your data. There's no way. It's all getting encrypted on your machine and then uploaded and then synchronized between your various devices. So you have to have the sync password, and the AnySync people don't have it. And if you're even more paranoid than that, you can also host the sync server on your own platform as well. But for reasons we'll get into in the middle of the show, that's probably not necessary, especially the rates they're charging, which is almost nothing for a hosted solution. What do you know about this so far, Jonathan?
So I've looked at it, and I can't help but chuckle at the timing that Google Plus pulled the plug yesterday. And there, you know, all five of us that used Google Plus. But you think about it, and we use Google's platforms for so much. Like I use their calendar and their contact system pretty much exclusively. And where would I be if they pulled the plug on, say, Google Calendar? Well, it would actually be disastrous because I actually store a lot of business information there. And it really, it's a reminder of the power of open source and what something like AnySync is doing. So they have a calendar service. If someone got real invested in the AnySync calendar service and finally these guys say, well, that's it, we're going to pull the plug on it, you just go, shrug, download your data, and throw your own instance up on a server somewhere and keep on going. We can't do that with Google Plus. We can't do that with Google Calendar. And I'm very interested to kind of pick his brain about, you know, the reasoning why they decided to go this direction, and just, I guess, congrats, because it's so cool, and I wish Google would do more of these things like this.
Well, you know, and I was an early adopter of Google Plus because it was seemed to be the right kind of mix for me to do general blogging, you know, and have a good place to put that and have a commenting system like that. I didn't want to host like a WordPress instance or anything. So I was just, you know, I was just dealing with, you know, that. And then so I'm very sad it got shut down because it also let us have a shared channel. You know, you had authorization to post to our Google Plus account for Floss Weekly and so on. So I need to find a new place to post something like that. So it's going to be really weird. The other thing is that I exported my data, but I don't know what will import it. I don't know what platforms already understand the Google Plus export format. So that's kind of weird. We'll get into that in a moment. Right? Before we do that, I do have a very important message because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Easily run production applications with DigitalOcean, a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. Whether you're running one virtual machine or 10,000, DigitalOcean has you covered with the flexibility to customize standard or CPU-optimized droplets. You can set up SSD-based virtual machines in 55 seconds or less. You can capture backups and snapshots. DigitalOcean is designed for developers. The easy-to-use control panel and API lets developers spend more time coding and less time managing their infrastructure. Use Kubernetes to improve availability, scalability, and resource efficiency of containerized apps. Over 2,000 open-source tutorials available for developers. On DigitalOcean's marketplace, discover and deploy pre-configured one-click applications, including LAMP, Docker, GitLab, Jenkins, Plesk, cPanel, WordPress, and many more. Find an application that suits your case, then spin it up on a droplet in 60 seconds or less. Industry-leading price performance. Access the compute resources you need at the lowest rates, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. Know what you'll pay monthly with predictable and straightforward billing. And included at no additional cost, monitoring and alerts, 99.99% uptime SLA, team accounts, cloud firewalls, full DNS management, 12 global data centers. Data centers are located around the world, meaning you have the connectivity and redundancy you need to provide the best service to your customers. 24/7, 365 world-class support. DigitalOcean is trusted by over 1 million developers, including Stonehenge. Go to do.co/twit today. Sign up and receive a free $100 credit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. DigitalOcean, designed for developers, built for businesses. And we thank DigitalOcean of their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
And how is your last name pronounced? I should have asked before we started.
Actually, you successfully pronounced it in the end. It's a Cohen. So like Cohen, but with a ha in the beginning.
I get it. That's really cool. Wonderful. And where are you speaking to us from?
London, England.
London, okay. Yes, over, let's see, which way is it from here? That way. Okay, I'm waving in your general direction somewhere over that way. Cool, cool. So give us a 30,000-foot view. Why would someone want to use something like EtiSync?
So first of all, you gave a great introduction in the beginning on what EtiSync is. And the main reason why would you want to use it is at the moment, when you use a provider like Google or iCloud or even Nextcloud, all of your information is on the server, lies on the server, unencrypted, in the clear, where the service provider, hackers, and you know, employees, a lot of people can access your data and read it and manipulate you and you know, track you and do a lot of bad things to you based on that.
And you started the project, right?
Correct, yeah.
And what were you using before that, and what made you decide EtiSync had reached its time to come?
I think I initially came up with the idea for EtiSync around a decade ago when I was working on SHR, like an OpenMoco distribution. I don't know if you know OpenMoco, like it was an open source mobile phone.
So I
noticed that we all worked very hard to secure our communications, but we didn't really secure any of our other information, such as the notes, calendars, and tasks. And so that kind of planted the seed. And then I moved to Android and I didn't trust Google to sync my data. So to your question, I did not sync at all. And so that kind of progressed. And then in 2016, I think I had enough with waiting for someone to build it and decided to quit my job, build it myself, and dedicated 3 months to build the first version of what EtiSync is today.
So what's the architecture like? So I've got something running on my that plugs into my like mail.app and things like that, and my calendar thing. How does it look on my side?
Okay, so on your side, first of all, let's start with the easy one, which is Android. You just install an app, set it up, put in your credentials, and that's it. It looks exactly like a Google account. Use the same applications. Everything is as seamless as it gets. On the desktop, you just run our desktop bridge, I guess similar to what ProtonMail do. And then you can use it with any CalDAV and CarDAV supporting application, which would be contacts.app, calendar.app, Thunderbird, Outlook, and many others.
Well, does the server side act as a mail relay too?
No, unfortunately, no. I mean, the server is really just a very basic data store. We want to keep it basic. I mean, it's still a one-man show. There's a limit to what to what I can do and other things that are more important for us.
So, is this a labor of love, or do you have a funding model for this?
So, I guess, I mean, first of all, I built it for myself. That's how it started. And then, it's the truth, you know. Yeah. And then after that, I kind of realized that a lot of other people would be, you know, would find it useful. So I started expanding to the user base and the mission as well, which is to provide everyone, all the users in the world with secure way to handle their data and to decrypt it. So, yeah, so it's mostly a labor of love, but I do offer a hosted service to fund it. So hopefully I can, you know, spend full time on it and maybe even hire people to work on it. So it's kind of like you reinvest in the product, but it's not essential. It just would be a nice plus to have.
Cool. I'm actually curious now since I've heard the word cloud about 500 times just in the last 2 days. How do you have this hosted?
So we currently host it on the cloud, but in Austria, which is very friendly towards privacy compared to even the UK where I'm based, or even Germany and Switzerland, which are not as friendly as they used to be. And one of our design goals with Edisync is to make it as secure as possible and trust the server as little as possible. So it doesn't really matter where we store the information, but yeah, we still chose a secure, privacy respecting country.
That's awesome. It's probably clearly why you don't have this in the U.S. It would just be like the opposite of what you want. Very crazy that way. And so what's the protocol? What's the wire protocol between my devices and your cloud?
So it's a custom built one. There wasn't anything, you know, available that was, you know, that did all the things we wanted it to do. But it's based on HTTP and JSON, and it's not an open standard because it's not a standard, but I'm working on maybe doing that, and it's just available. Everything is open source, so you can just read and, you know, follow the protocol. But it's really basic. You just send information, store it, and get it back. That's it.
Okay. And I presume you can share this. Well, you're sharing it between your multiple devices, right?
Yeah, correct. So you can. There's a sharing functionality, and then it just works the same way that it works on WhatsApp or Signal or any other messenger application. You just see the fingerprint of the other person's key, and then you can verify it in a secure channel. Could be Signal, for example, or PGP secured email, or maybe a publicly posted place. And then you just accept it, and that's it. Then you have a secure channel where you can share the calendars, you can share it read-only, a lot of different variations.
Hey, Tom, I wanted to jump in and ask, the original idea for this, was it kind of to replace Google Calendar and that suite of tools? Was that, is that what you were using beforehand?
No, so I wasn't using, I mean, yes, that's the idea, but I wasn't using Google Calendar at all. I just lost my data every time I lost my device, essentially.
So I'm interested because, you know, I mentioned it beforehand. I use Google Calendar, and one of the other things I use a lot is actually the timeline on Google Maps to be able to track my mileage for doing business stuff. And, you know, things like that are really useful to me. And then we see, and I assume to a lot of people as well, but then we see things like Google pulling the plug on Google Plus. It's just, I don't know, I guess it gives me a warm feeling in my heart that someone is out there doing the good work of trying to make sure that there's a a calendar program that's open source that we can all jump on board whenever Google finally decides to pull the plug on Google Calendar.
Yeah, I mean, if even you can look at a website, one of our the biggest thing, the tagline is your data, yours only, and we truly believe in that. So even if, as you said earlier in the introduction, even if we do, you know, end up pulling the plug at some point for some reason, although not planned, it's going to be okay. You can just take all the data with you and just host it yourself, or maybe someone else will pop up and host an alternative service, because we have everything is open. We don't do open core. Everything is open source and GPL, LGPL, AGPL. So you can just use it yourself.
Well, let me put a little bug in your ear for a future future request then, and that is something like the timeline from Google Maps, where it tracks my GPS where I go. For a lot of business people that have to track their mileage, it would just be a killer feature to be able to have that where they manage it themselves. Right, yes, a feature request.
No, I mean, I didn't want to mention it, but now that you mentioned it first, it's actually something that I really want to have as well. And because as you when you do it with Google, all of your location data is shared with Google, but with this one, it will be safely secured in a way that only you can access it. So yeah, that's something I'm dying to have for a while, and hopefully I'll have it for you soon.
If you make that work, I will be a convert. I will jump on board.
Looking forward.
All right. So since Floss Weekly, in the past year or so has been This Week in Blockchain, I have to ask, is this project, is EddySync blockchain enabled?
So unfortunately, maybe fortunately, no. Although I have been contacted before, actually, by someone that said I should. So I don't know, but no, nothing. I don't think so.
Well, but you have a change journal. Isn't that basically the same idea as blockchain? That's what I was trying to set you up to talk about.
fair enough, yes. And there are similar, you know, we actually use a lot of similar primitives. So as you said, a tamper-proof change journal, which is all the changes are saved in that list in a way that cannot be tampered with. And this is actually the basis of the EtherSync protocol. I don't know, actually, maybe, you know, maybe that guy was right. maybe there is a way to have blockchain integration.
It's kind of a joke question. There you go. Hey, so we do have a chat room. We do have a question from the chat room. Are there any issues with GDPR for those in the EU? Especially since your main hosting is in the EU.
Well, first of all, actually, I'm not sure about GDPR's approach towards encryption, because in a sense, because I only save encrypted data, if I don't have the key, I don't have anything on you. But obviously, we do comply with the GDPR and comply with GDPR requests, and we have already, like someone before, when they deleted their account, they asked to delete all the data, and we had. But really, all we have on you is your email. So.
Have you gotten any warrant requests where someone comes and says, give us your data on this person, and you hand them the binary blob and say, good luck?
That's actually a good thing. It's like when Lavabit, I think, printed out their private keys on paper and sent it to the DOJ when they got subpoenaed. So maybe that would be funny. But no, still no warrant requests. We actually have a warrant canary as well. So in case people are worried, we update it officially every 2 months, but in practice, actually every 1 month. No requests yet.
That warrant canary is actually GPG signed too, isn't it?
Yeah. It's all signed by my key, which is the same one you'll be using for any vulnerability report, which luckily, knock on wood, we didn't have any.
So what about, it seems like the weakness in all of this would be the user's password, wouldn't it? If all the encryption is right and everything else is right, then it all boils down to how good of a password someone sets?
Yes and no. Obviously, if you use a password like 123, yes, maybe it's not going to hold for a while. But we used something called script, which is a password key derivation function. Essentially, what it does, it takes your password, as simple as it is, and runs a lot of intensive computations on it to make it very hard for people to brute force, to essentially run an attack, checking every possible password to see if that's the correct one. So we there is a protection on it, yeah.
Excellent.
But choose a good password, yeah, still.
So just thinking, I use LastPass for managing passwords for a whole bunch of different websites. And while LastPass claims to do the same thing that you guys do, and that is, you know, they encrypt everything they can't get inside your binary blob, it's a closed source program. Is there any plans, future plans for EtiSync to kind of be a LastPass replacement?
That would be great, but I have to do a small shout out to actually Bitwarden. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. That's a fully open source solution that actually is pretty good, and they seem to do a great job. I would have done it, but they seem to be doing such a great job, and that's the one I recommend people to use nowadays.
There's probably something to be said for not putting all of your eggs into one basket using one service, even if it is open source, I suppose.
I guess so as well. But also, I mean, the nice thing about having all of your eggs in one basket, which we see with Linux, is that the amount of development effort and the amount of bug reports and security research that's done on the kernel is amazing. And I wish we had the same level, the same push behind us.
It's synergy. So your actual source code, has it been reviewed by any security experts? Has there been any kind of a paid audit of it, or is it just individuals and many eyeballs?
Many eyeballs. I don't know actually how many eyeballs, but some eyeballs. but we do plan on having a security audit in the future. We're currently in the process of improving the encryption scheme a bit. So to use SALT, which is a standard encryption library, which we don't use at the moment. We use something else. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we'll probably have an audit run. Yeah, but the problem is it's prohibitively expensive. So we'll probably seek funding from many organizations that provide that.
So in the show notes that you sent to us, because we ask people to send us questions, you mentioned Nextcloud. And, a lot of us that care about this stuff, we've got a Nextcloud instance set up somewhere. What is there any integration with Nextcloud? And what do you guys offer that Nextcloud doesn't?
So first of all, Nextcloud is a great product, and they offer an amazing enterprise suite. I would recommend using it in many cases. But one place where they fall short compared to EtiSync is that the lack of end-to-end encryption. So when you use Nextcloud, all of your data is saved unencrypted on the provider's server. Or if you run your own server, it lies unencrypted there. And for many of us, actually running our own server means running it in the cloud. So that's essentially a provider as well. And even if you run it at home, it still lies there unencrypted. God, that was long, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. So I kind of want to pivot, and we've talked a lot about the nuts and bolts. Usability. So one of the neat things about, and I'll go to Android because that's what I use, and apparently it's what you use as well. One of the neat things about Android and Google is, your contacts get integrated right into the dialer. Your calendar gets integrated with things, and you have the notifications, and it all syncs together. How much of a drop-in replacement is EtiSync, specifically for someone using Android that's used to the way all of that works? Is it pretty seamless?
So 100% into drop-in replacement. You would not notice you using something else. It's really just that. Everything works. The dialer works. The calendar works. Contacts work. Everything works. And it's the same applications.
And I assume it's all set up to where even if the phone is offline, it's got a locally stored copy that it decrypts on the fly?
Yeah, exactly. So it keeps its own cache of everything, and then when it goes back online, it just syncs. So it's really, I mean, I cannot stress it enough. It's exactly like using a Google account in that sense.
And so, assumably, at some point, you have to punch your password in to be able to decrypt all of this. Is that just once when you first boot the phone? Is it tied into the phone's existing key store? How does that part work?
So at the moment, you do it only on installation, not every time the phone boots. And then it derives the password, like I described earlier, and then saves that in the phone's key store. So it could be a hardware store, could be whatever. We just use the standard Android method. So yeah, at the moment it's on installation, but we could change it in the future. And people have asked us to change it in the future for on boot.
I suspect that there's quite an intersection of the people that want to use something like this and the people that are paranoid enough not to necessarily trust their phone's key store.
Yeah, 100%. And I have to admit, I may be even one of them. So, yeah.
Yeah, so yes. Well, you know, you read things. It's funny, the things that 15 years ago were total conspiracy theories that just lurked on the dark corners of the internet. And I remember reading about some of them and thought, oh, goodness, well, maybe you could do that, but there's no way. And then, you know, 5 years after that, you woke up and you read the headlines and this guy from the NSA dumped a bunch of documents and you found out that, oh, a lot of those conspiracy theories were actually right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we asked you, we asked about the Change Journal. Oh, so what is involved with getting started with EddieSync? With, you know, so if I'm regular Joe Schmo and I listen to this podcast and I go, that is awesome, I want to get involved in this. How do we get started? How do we set up an account? What does that process look like?
So it's really just using any other service. You just go online to ettersync.com, register, download the app, enter your credentials, and that's it. Then you can start using it. You can also use the inbuilt tools to import data from your current Google account, and you can also set it as the default account on your device, which you obviously would like. But really, it's just an easy-to-use drop-in replacement. On the desktop, it's a bit harder than that at the moment, but it's something we're working on. You need to download the app, run it, run two commands, but it is run from the command line. So it's a bit of a struggle for some people, but we're working on making it into a great application. But yeah, it's also very simple on the desktop and on Android.
So you have an Android app. I see this. I'm kind of pawing through the source code in your GitHub right now for that. what was that experience like? Was that your first mobile app? I mean, after the other thing you were doing.
No, so I mean, actually for the last few years, I've been building apps with my brother, just like apps on the side. I think our best, most downloaded app reached 400,000 downloads. So yeah.
Wow.
It's a big one.
And what are some of the difficulties? Well. Yeah, what are the difficulties in creating an Android app that has this kind of, well, I guess it's not really far reaching because it's just basically acting as an endpoint for contacts and calendars and stuff, right?
Actually, we were lucky enough. So EtherSync, the first version of EtherSync was a fork of DevDroid, where we just changed the synchronization method from WebDAV to the EtherSync protocol. So we had a very solid platform to start from. And then from that, mm-hmm. it kind of evolved. And now we don't really share that much code anymore. But it was very easy thanks to them. And thanks to, again, open source software, really.
Cool. And you keep mentioning sync, and I keep thinking of the most common crazy problem about sync is that if you have two different devices that changed some single entry in two different ways, how do you resolve that? Do you resolve it by timestamp or what?
So we have this change journal that I mentioned earlier. So every change is on that list. So the first one who gets to that list is the winner, and then we'll have to... We'll get a conflict, essentially, and we'll have to append, like recreate that entry and append it on the other one. But it's the last one winning if it's actual conflict. But it's very rare in our case, because how often do you change your contact on a few different devices before you get to sync? So when all of them are fine, yeah.
Yes, and of course, I've got to ask, since I'm on the other camp, when's the iOS app coming out?
Oh, that's I get that a lot. Hopefully within the next few months, but I don't want to promise anything. I can't stand by, but really, I hope within the next 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, because you have to learn a whole different tool chain and all that sort of stuff. So it's quite a leap for most people. That's why I've been really excited about Flutter, because it's one tool chain for both sides and a much easier language than either Dart or Kotlin or Swift or Objective-C. So. But that's my plug. That's, you know, since I'm really all into Flutter and stuff these days. So what's on the roadmap? What's still missing besides the iOS app?
iOS, yeah, exactly. that's the main one. After that, I mean, we have the web client where you can use it from the web. It's pretty feature rich, but just not on feature parity with the rest of the clients, because unlike Android and the desktop, there we actually need to implement the whole contact calendar themselves rather than just be a plug to existing applications. Another thing I'm really looking forward to is having third-party application integration. So because we're a secure solution, we don't really want to trust other applications with our encryption keys. And we don't want to encourage users to put their encryption keys often and on many applications, because that will lead to phishing. So we want to have a sort of a framework to enable other applications to use us as a backend. And the first one I want to build is a native add-on for Thunderbird.
Cool. And importing data, can I use like vCard format to import my contacts?
So you can both import and export to vCard and iCal. On Android, we also have a utility to let you import from a different account on your device. So if you're already using a Google account, for example, in your device, you can just import directly from that. You don't even need to export first.
Cool. And do you have a day job, too, that's paying the bills while you're trying to get this done?
So as I said in the beginning, I quit my job 2 years ago to start that. After that, I started a startup, actually two of them. Didn't work out in the end. But they were paying the bill for a bit. And now at the moment, I'm actually looking for grants or any other form of funding to be able to work in it for full time for at least a year. But if not, I'll go back to doing something else that pays the bills.
Have you even had a chance to get some revenue from your mobile apps that you've made?
Yeah, but nothing significant. I mean, the thing is, those apps were free. And I'm very much against tracking people and ads. So we used ads very lightly. I mean, after a while, only after it really took off, we started using ads and very lightly. And even now, we don't really use them that much. So we don't get a lot of money, and you don't get the big bucks that you get if you use tracking ads.
So of course. Yeah, that's where the big money is these days in terms of free apps. That and in-app purchases for little coins that make you go faster through the game or whatever. So that's the other in-app purchases are the other big thing there. So what are some of the technologies you're using? So obviously you're using Java in the mobile app, but what are some of the other technologies that EdiSync's written in?
So we use React for the web version, also TypeScript instead of JavaScript better type support and also better assurances that everything works as expected. On the desktop, we use Python for the Python API, and then we use Radicale, which is another open source solution. That's the basis for our desktop bridge. Again, the power of open source and how we can cobble things together to make a great product for everyone. We have, as you said, a bit of Java on the Android client, but we actually really recently moved to Kotlin, which just faster to work than Java. And I think that's it, yeah. And maybe Swift soon when we do iOS app.
And how do you test this?
That's a good question. So we have it's a one way to stumble every programmer, because we don't really, it's really hard. We do test all of the encryption stuff. So all of the encryption code is well tested and have a unit test for all of them. We don't test the UI automatically. We test it manually. We don't test the integration with Radicale. We just assume Radicale works. Although we're gonna add some more testing there. So it's not fully tested, but then again, it's tested by a lot of users every day, including myself. And because of the change journals, you can't really lose your data anyway. So everything is safe.
Have you had any bugs to report upstream?
You mean on Dadroid or Radicale?
Yeah. Anything you're using.
Oh, yeah. Wow. A lot all the time. So as I said, Davdroid and Radicale, I sent patches to both. I sent patches to a lot of the libraries we use on the server. So for the billing, so the library you use for the Stripe integration. Yeah, a lot. I think it's part of being a good open source citizen is when you see an issue, is sending it, helping fixing it. And also, obviously, it benefits us as well.
And it's also good to send in feature requests, because sometimes the developers don't know that there's something missing that would really be of use to some of their customers. So You know, feel free to suggest things about different ways you want the software to work, and developers really welcome that sort of stuff. So, well, up to a certain point. After that, it's like, oh, come on, guys, go use something else. But, yeah. Internationalization has got to be important, given that you're a Europe-based company.
Yes, it is. We have, I think, I don't remember which language. First of all, because we're based on Davdroid, we actually use a lot of their strings still, because we made sure not to change too many of the strings. So internationalization would not be a problem. But we are looking into more contributors that are willing to translate and help with that. And we're again looking for, if we get any of the grants, some of it will be dedicated to that, to better translations.
Tom, just thinking about this project, there's something in open source news these days that I'd like to pick your brain about a little bit. So there's some projects that are fully open source, similar to this one in that regard, like Redis is the big one that comes to mind. And they have had problems where they've put everything out as open source, and then they sell basically hosting for whatever their project is. And then Amazon will come along and say, oh, well, that's a neat idea. We're going to start hosting that and just kind of gobble up all of the market share for that open source project. And there is this little writer, licensing writer, that the Commons Clause is what they've called it. And basically it's a little writer that says, oh, by the way, no one else can sell this as a service. And the open source community right now is just kind of, it's becoming another holy war, let's say. I'm real curious what your thoughts are on this, because you're kind of in that place in that you are trying to make some money by selling this as a service. And I don't see anything that would prevent someone like an Amazon from coming in and going, we're going to start selling this as a service now and compete right against you. You're selling it for $2 a head. We'll do it for $1 a head, and we'll just take the hit, until we run you out of business. What's your thoughts on that?
First of all, let me acknowledge that for Etisync, the business, quote, unquote, it is a risk. Luckily, not from Amazon and Google, maybe, because no one would trust them with their data. But, you know, it's all the privacy people don't really like them. But yeah, it's a risk. But also, Etisync is also a mission for me and an open source project, not just a business. And as a business, it's not making that much money. So I will continue developing it. Regarding your question about Commons Clause, I think a lot of people agree with me that it's not really open source. It's just hijacking the term and the licenses just to appear as open source, but actually retaining, giving the company behind it all of the power to do whatever they please.
Okay, interesting. So what are your thoughts about the idea of an open source project and then Amazon coming along and hosting it and kind of stealing their business out from under them? Because this is something that does actually happen to some people, maybe not all the time, but I'm curious what you think about that.
No, I mean, it's a scary thought, and it's, you know, it's incredibly annoying as well if people, you know, if Amazon would do that. And this is partly why I used Affero GPL, so AGPL, for the server. So at least if someone does it, they will have to release everything that touches it as open source as well. I don't know what to tell you. It's hard to say. It sucks. It's not nice. But I don't see another way without respecting the user's freedoms. And I guess it's similar to choosing GPL versus BSD. So BSD gives them even more leeway to do whatever they want. And some people still choose BSD. So it really depends on where you stand. And yeah, if you have a business, it's a risk. It's a massive risk. And I don't know what I would do in their stead, to be honest. It's not a fun place to be in.
I suppose that's probably one of the better answers, is that the AGPL is already something designed to combat this, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's designed to behave exactly like GPL. So if all you offer is just hosting and no value add over it, yeah, you'll it's a risk. You'll be cannibalized. But you know what? Amazon can still re-implement an open source project if they think it's a strategic investment, and they don't really, you know, if they want to conquer that market, they can do it even without reusing your product. And you can see it with React coming from Facebook and Angular coming from Google. A lot of those companies re-implement whole technologies just because they think they can do it better. And it doesn't cost them that much compared to, again, Redis Lab and all the small players. So I don't think it's a risk. It just sucks.
Fair enough. Appreciate you. appreciate your thoughts on that. Someone just whispered in my ear that, not literally, that you've won the Haymaker Hamakor Award, basically an Israeli award equivalent to maybe something the FSF does. Tell us about that.
So first of all, I didn't win it. I was nominated.
Nominated for it.
Yeah, I mean, like shortlist. I don't know how you call it. It's like when they say your name in the Academy Awards, but you don't win it. So that's the
honorable
that's
mention.
No, but yeah, second place or to fourth. I don't know. So I got that. I think many years ago. It was for the advancement of free software, especially with regards to Israeli community. It's called Hamakor, which means the source, and it's run by the Israeli equivalent of the FSF. Yeah, it was based on all of my work on OpenMoko and Enlightenment, the window manager. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Huh?
Enlightenment window, yeah? E17.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I worked on that as well.
I've got to say, way back in the day, I was really excited about OpenMoko, but I couldn't quite come up with the cash to buy one of the handsets. But I was excited about what you guys were doing. And I think in some ways, at least some of that genetics has made its way into Android now. I don't know, maybe the not quite even spiritual successor, but OpenMoko was one of the first really to get out there and say, well, let's put open source on phones.
Yeah, I mean, we even came out, I mean, not we, because I was not part of the company, but it came out before the iPhone as well. It came out in 2007. So it was groundbreaking in many ways, having a full smartphone that's fully touchscreen, runs Linux, runs normal Linux. As you said, it was the first, the first such adventure into open source on the phones as well. It was really groundbreaking. It was great to work on it, actually. And I see a lot of the things that we did there kind of like not, I don't want to say landed in Android because I don't know they did the same, but at least, opened the path towards that. Yeah.
Yes. So before I turn it back over to Randall to close the show up, there is an idea that we've heard bandied around by some people, and especially here in the United States, this is one of the kind of debates we're having as a country. If you don't have anything to hide, why would you make your data? Why would you encrypt your data? Why would you care about it unless you're doing something illegal? And what's the EtiSync answer to that question?
I can't tell you the EtiSync answer. I can tell you my answer. I'm joking. But the thing is that you do have something to hide. We all do. And you just don't realize it. I mean, there's a famous quote by Cardinal Richelieu, which goes something like, give me six sentences written by the most honest of men, and in them I'll find a reason to have him hanged. And it's true. You know, first of all, you can see on Twitter, a lot of people misconstrue one another. But also, when you write notes to yourself, when you talk to your friends, you use a very different language that could be abused. So you want, and first of all, when you write notes as well, all of that includes a lot of things that could be used against you. And, you know, you have to remember as well that privacy is a core tenet of our democracy and our way of life and any open society, because it's required for, you know, forming your own thoughts, for keeping your dignity and, you know, self-respect. You know, considering the civil rights movements, for example, I don't know if it could have happened if everyone would have been, you know, if everyone was tracked and everyone would have, it was followed and everyone, all of their thoughts were followed as well, tracked as well. So I think we have to remember that maybe you don't have anything to hide, but as a society we do, and we need to keep on supporting that because people push the boundaries. And what was criminal yesterday is actually completely normal today. And it's important, to support that, I think.
So is it the idea...
Sorry, Jonathan.
Sorry, we stepped on each other just a second there. So is it the idea that thoughts are always free? And we've now entered this point to where the little tiny computers that we carry around has become always an extension of our brain through our note-taking apps and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it. Exactly, yeah. I have nothing to add on that. That's definitely part of it.
This hits home. That's what I was starting to say. This hits home for me, really, because I was 20 years ago, I had a real famous computer crime case where I became a triple felon for doing what I thought was my job and having it be misinterpreted by some high up people at a large company that makes chips. But that's sort of behind me now. It's a long time ago, but I'm still I still have impact. There's certain countries I can't travel to anymore, so that's kind of annoying. Anyway, we're almost out of time. I wanted to get a little more specific about the kinds of people you'd like to help you out. So internationalization is clearly one of them. Are you also missing any skill sets in terms of the coding?
I don't know if skill sets, it's more just manpower. A lot of, as you said yourself, we have a lot of technologies. So it doesn't matter what kind of programmer you are, we probably have something for you to do. And there's always, you know, always more things to do. As we covered the tracking your location thing from earlier that Jonathan mentioned, there's really a lot to do. And it also comes, if you're a skilled writer, you know, blog posts that spread the word about privacy or just tutorials to make it, you know, to make it easier for newcomers to install it, how-to guides to, I don't know, share your calendars. There's so much to do. And we are very welcoming and would love help with people if they want to help. Yeah.
Awesome, awesome. And I would strongly recommend, again, I'm going to make the same plea again, that rather than start your iOS app in Swift, start it in Dart and Flutter. Because then, once you get that finished, which you can sit alongside your Android existing app, once you get that finished, you just push another button, and that code base then becomes the Android code base, too. I'd really strongly suggest that, as long as you're starting a green start on your iOS thing. And, you know, Google's standing way behind Flutter and really picking up some traction. Now, there's something like 12,000 apps now in the Google Play and iOS stores that use Flutter now. So it's really catching on. Anyway, I'd make that strong suggestion, just to let you know. And Dart's easy to learn. It really is trivial to learn. Okay, well, like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go?
No, just remember, privacy is a sacred right. That's, if you have to take one thing away, please make it be that.
Awesome, awesome. And so like two favorite questions. Since you're a heavy coder, I can definitely ask you these questions. What's your favorite text editor?
Oh, Vim, of course.
Oh, I can't
Sorry,
get a break on that.
I missed
one.
It.
It's okay. And what's your favorite language?
At the moment, actually, TypeScript. I did not expect to say that, but yeah.
Right. Cool. And that's actually the other advantage of moving over to Dart is you could actually do your whole website app in Angular Dart, which I think is a much cleaner language than TypeScript. But again, I'm biased. I'm definitely biased because I'm all in on Dart and Flutter these days. So anyway, hey, it's been great having you on to talk about this. I'm sure you'll get a few new clicks on your website right after this show. Since people finish listening to it, they may not be listening to it live, but sometime in the next couple of days, they'll probably be able to hear it. Thanks for coming on the show talking about EdiSync.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was great being here.
Very cool. That was Tom Hakon talking to us about EdiSync. What do you think there, sir?
Refreshing. we bandied around internally just a few days ago the question about, you know, what does Floss Weekly lack? And the thing that immediately came to mind is more of the small projects, labor of love projects. You know, enterprise is important, of course, but it's projects like this, I think, that really makes open source great. Kind of that I hate to use the word purity, but I'll say it. The purity of purpose, somebody talking about, you know, one of the essential freedoms, some of the essential freedoms, privacy and things like that. He may have won me over. I may be signing up for this and starting to use it. I'm really impressed.
Yeah, and I like that he started his description of why he wrote it was, you know, I had my own itch to scratch, maybe not literally like that, but he said something like that. And then he, as sort of an afterthought, he goes, maybe other people also have this same itch. And so maybe we can, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. And so let's make this a public project and you know, host it for people if they don't want to host it themselves and work with the community and come up with an Android app and hopefully soon an iOS app written in Flutter. And we'll see. We'll see if I can influence them well enough. Flutter.io, by the way, guy. So go check that out. Oh, no, it's Flutter.dev now. They got the .dev domain. Google did. So, So yeah. And so let's talk about who's coming up, because this is also pretty exciting too, because I've got a pretty full schedule now. I've added three new things since last week. Mycroft is coming up next week, and you guys are going to have to arm wrestle to see who wants to co-host that show, because I hear both of you guys are going to like, I want to be on that show. So, but you are on this show. Come on. You see, maybe you should take a week off. Anyway, so Mycroft is the world's first open source assistant. So think something like Siri or Google Home or what's the third one? That's only Google Assistant. What's the third one from the other company? I don't remember. Alexa. There we go. Right. I thought we should put all three of them in one room and let them duke it out with each other. So Mycroft runs anywhere except on a Mac desktop right now. I can't play with it before now. But it runs, in theory, it'll run on a desktop computer inside an automobile or on a Raspberry Pi. It's open source software that can be freely remixed, extended, and improved. And it may be used in anything from a science project to an enterprise software application. So think, you know, voice recognition, some semantic capabilities, things like that. That should be pretty fun. I think it's going to be an exciting show. Hopefully he'll be able to demo it during the show. That'll be cool. Ionix after that. Ionix is a framework for free open source mobile UI toolkit for developing high quality cross-platform apps, unfortunately in JavaScript, for native iOS, Android, and the web, all from a single code base. I'd say use Flutter instead, but I guess I'll be arm wrestling on that show. We'll see. just added to the show, actually a repeat customer, but things have changed in a couple of years. Aquameta. And this, it was so bizarre when I did this show a couple of years ago, but he says he's got a whole bunch of new stuff in it. So Aquameta, get this, is a web development environment where instead of storing the code as flat files in the file system, everything is stored in Postgres as relational data, including source code, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, images, and other resources. So this is how to abuse your Postgres server as a web server. So it was bizarre before. I think he's made it even more bizarre, but he said, can I come back on the show? I said, sure, why not?
I remember that one. That was a fun interview to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you were on that one. Maybe you'll want to be on that show instead. You'll want to be on that show. See, that's much different. Okay. Cyclone DX also just got added. It's a lightweight software bill of material specification. So it's not actually software, but we had a discussion a few weeks ago about standardized bill of materials so that tools could analyze it. And this is a up-and-coming specification, and it was actually sent to me in reaction to the show that we had a few weeks ago about bill of material stuff. So that'll be fun. Redis is coming back after a couple of years. It's a open sourced in-memory data structure store. It uses a database cache or message broker. It supports a range queries, bitmaps, hyperlog logs, geospatial indexes, radius queries, and streams. And if anybody got bingo on that last sentence, congratulations. Anyway, so a lot of tokens there, a lot of code words there. Also just added to the schedule, which surprisingly is right next to the Redis update, is RavenDB, which is a NoSQL document database. So we used to have blockchain shows back to back. Now we've got NoSQL shows back to back, so it could be pretty cool. Well, NoSQL shows and somebody abusing an SQL database. This will be a fun 6 weeks coming up, so that'll be pretty cool. One more thing also added since last week. So that's four new things in the last 2 weeks. I've been busy. BareOS, I don't know how to pronounce this. BareOS backup. It's 100% open source fork of the backup project from Bacula.org. I don't remember that one at all, but the fork has been in development since late 2010 and has a lot of new features. But it's basically an open source backup solution, so that'll be pretty fun. We have the big spreadsheet on this show. It is linked from the homepage for the show, which is twit.tv/floss. And again, if you have any other suggestions, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. We have a live stream normally at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. Live.twit.tv. We took a number of questions from there, I think maybe three questions. Virgil, I don't think your name got called out, but yeah, thank you for the question that we asked midway through the show. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter. I still post there occasionally, but I can't share that account, unfortunately. You can follow me at Merlin on Twitter. I am going to be at the Pearl Conference in Pittsburgh in mid-June, and I'm going to be in OSCON in Portland in mid-July. At least I'm hoping I'm going to be at both of those. I'm going to apply as press, and I haven't gotten around to doing that. I've got way too many things on my stack to get to everything I want. So this must be the 3 P's tour, because here I am in Philadelphia, and then I'm going to go to Pittsburgh, and then I'm going to be home in Portland. So I just realized the onomatopoeia of all that. Anything you want to plug there, Jonathan?
So I will plug something. As most people know, I do some writing over at Hackaday, and my latest article is not quite ready to go, although it's going to be an interesting one, all about Wi-Fi, light switches, and UL certification coming up soon. But what I'll actually mention is the Hackaday Prize just released, and so there's like $200,000 worth of prizes. Makers, go check that out. That will be very interesting to you, some good support. And then, Randall, I wanted to ask you, Google Plus has gone away. Is there a service that you've moved to that's replacing it?
No, I haven't. Well, I'm thinking my personal blogging is going to be on Medium. I really like sort of the interaction and the styles that are available there. And if you become a professional and people like you a lot, you can actually get a slight bit of cash back, which is kind of nice. No, I have my Google Plus export data that I needed to get before the thing shut down, but I don't even know what format it's in. I haven't even opened up the file, so I have no idea whether or when I'll be able to import it. I've been Googling import Google Plus, and so far nothing's coming up. So I'm a little annoyed that that got dropped, because that was my primary blogging thing for like 6 or 7 years. I put especially like I was really public about my my weight loss and my health improvement, and so I have links to articles that are no longer in Google Plus that and all the wonderful comments that were on those things too. It was like the feedback I was getting from people about things that I was doing that were working and things I was doing that were not working, things like that. And now that's all in just some big zip file from the Google Plus export. And I don't know if it's ever going to be seen again. You know, I still have a Tumblr account that I still have some old stuff on. So maybe there's an import from Google Plus to Tumblr. Because I just hit my Tumblr the other day, and it was the story of how I was spending the last days in my last property that I owned, my last house. When I got kicked out in 2008 because of the crash. So that's 10 years ago. Yes, yeah, so that was my last Tumblr post. It was 10 years ago. So I guess I've got 4 years worth of Google Plus. So maybe if I can just add it to the end of that somehow. So if anybody out there knows, please, merlin@stonehenge.com. If you've got a place that will take the Google Plus import or export, I should say, that's a reasonable platform to continue my blogging on, that would be really, really great. Somebody in my audience probably knows something, because they'll probably suggest a lot of open source things that I have to host myself. So, all right. Hey, you know, this is a good show. Good, fun show. Yes. Glad. Hopefully I didn't have too many Wi-Fi dropouts at the hotel here, but I guess we'll see when we talk to people at the end of the show. Anyway, so thank you once again, Jonathan. And again, you're going to have to arm wrestle. Simon that wanted to do it?
It's one of the other guys. Came up? I don't remember exactly who.
One of the guys. Oh, maybe Michael, because he hasn't been on in a while.
Yeah, that's it. It was Michael.
Yeah, it was Michael. Okay, yeah, you got it for arm wrestle, Michael, and see who actually gets it. All right. So, hey guys, it's been fun. I've had a great time. As usual, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.